I just want to make my usual disclaimer. It's not a class so much as just a, you know, a group exploration of this topic of the 12 links of interdependent origination, and to place it in context, which I haven't said the last few classes. And this is from Trungpa Rinpoche's, you know, the beginning of his book, basically, that there are two branches of Buddha Dharma. One is understanding the way things truly exist, ultimate reality, which you could say is emptiness. And the second is understanding the way things appear, which is relative reality, which Tony Duff calls fictional reality. It's literally means fake reality. Kunzop means, Kunzop Dempa means fake truth, artificial truth, not really the way it is at all. So the problem with our situation now is that we are taking this relative fictional way things appear to be, we're confusing with ultimate reality and thinking that things are solid, permanent. Even if intellectually you don't think like that, that's how we react to things, like from moment to moment. Although doing Dharma practice does help us with that. So the more practice we've done, the more we may be able to catch ourselves. But that's where all our suffering comes from in samsara, is from misperceiving what is relative to be, to have the characteristics of what is ultimate. So the 12 links in particular are a roadmap to understanding how things appear, how things work on the relative level, which is through interdependence. Everything that appears, appears by depending on other things. And the 12 links show how that process works. If we don't understand it, that's samsara. If we do understand it clearly and directly through experience, then that is freedom. That's how we free ourselves. So that's why we're doing this. That is the reason for studying the 12 links. So pulling out my handout again, we're just going to go through the links using the language on this handout, which is from Kala Rinpoche's Luminous Mind. Again, in the middle, so samsaric existence, cyclic existence, is like things going around. And so you have several levels of things going around in this chart, which is the basic wheel of life in Buddhism. You know, it's the map of how things appear, and it's held in the jaws of the Lord of Death to remind us of impermanence, that the main characteristic of relative reality that we can immediately relate to is that it is impermanent, it doesn't last. So the inner circle, again, is the three emotional poisons, ignorance represented by the pig, anger or aversion represented by the snake, and desire or attraction represented by the bird or the rooster. And then outside that, in the other chart, and in the wheel of life, like each of these charts is a little bit simplified from the wheel of life. This other one that I sent everybody a long time ago then has the six realms, which is how our three poisons play out into like our realm of physical and psychological experience. And then the outer circle, you know, all of it's just going around all the time. The outer circle is the 12 links. So everything starts with the first link of ignorance. We're going to talk this time as we do our recap about where we can intervene in this. For anybody who's missed those discussions, ignorance, all of our Dharma practice, and Mark pointed that out last Sunday, is that all of our Dharma practice works against ignorance. It works to clear up our ignorance and help us to see things the way that they really are. So that's the big intervention, is ignorance. That's what it's all about, all the Buddha Dharma. But if we're stuck in ignorance, then the way that it plays out is that leads to the next one, mental formations, which is the re-arising of previous karmic tendencies. All of our habitual patterns we've built up re-arise from ignorance, from lifetime to lifetime, from moment to moment. That leads to the formation of our consciousness in this life, or in this moment. That's our individual consciousness, sort of how we are, how we perceive things. And that's the four mental skandhas of form, of feelings is the second skandha. The mental skandhas are feelings, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. So consciousness is the whole thing. That leads to name and form, where we take on a physical form, embryonic, if you're talking about lifetime to lifetime, just the basic rudimentary beginnings of what form we're going to take in this lifetime based on the consciousness that is the culmination of the four mental skandhas or aggregates. So once we have that form, then we have the sense perceptions. We have the ability to perceive things through the six senses, the five senses we're familiar with in our culture, and then thinking, like the mental faculty, the mental sense. So all of our thoughts are considered sense perceptions as well. So still, it's all internal at this point, based on ignorance and previous karmic habits. All of the next few links unfold automatically, and now we begin to interact in link six with the outside world through contact. Our sense faculties meet sense objects. And then in link seven, we have a reaction to that. And that's automatic, that's instantaneous, automatic. We really don't have control over that. And I wanted to talk here a little bit. Here we're talking about the same feelings we're talking about in the second skanda of feelings, which is just our reaction is really rudimentary. It's just pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And so last week, after the teaching, like Zoom people were not here for that, but I have talked about this, like the idea that we could roll back the next links of craving and grasping. We could roll that back to pleasant, unpleasant as we see our emotional reactions start to develop and take form that's going to lead to action that's then going to mess us up. We're going to have the results of that experience, the results, the karmic results of that action. So, but when I talk about rolling it back, like we had some lovely pie and ice cream in honor of all of my references to pie and ice cream over the years. We had lovely pecan pie and ice cream last week after the teaching. And I was making the joke through the whole thing, oh, this is very pleasant pie and ice cream. And I realized that could be interpreted, and I could interpret that myself as meaning that it's kind of an insipid feeling. Like, oh, it's just pleasant. But pleasant covers the whole gamut. It's either, you know, you react to it as something you want or something you don't want. And that could range from like slightly lukewarm all the way to, I must have it. I would sell my soul to get it. Or I can't deal with this. I'm going to crawl into a hole for the next 20 years and not deal with anything at all. I mean, that's all pleasant. That's pleasant and unpleasant. Like they're all within pleasant and unpleasant. So when I say, oh, this pecan pie is really pleasant, I don't mean it only tastes a little bit good. It's still fabulous, wonderful pecan pie. But what I'm talking about is pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral are their present moment reactions. You're still in the present moment. You have not left the present moment and gotten yourself into trouble yet. So pecan pie is absolutely delicious. But it's still, if you can relate to it, is that really, I like this is good. And you haven't yet gone over into, I must have another slice of this pecan pie, which then you're in grasping. You know, grasping is, this is so good, I want more of it. That's link eight. No, sorry, craving. I'm saying craving when I mean, grasping when I mean craving. Craving is link eight. Like, so it tastes good, it's still pleasant. And then you move out of the present moment into the like future, like I gotta have more of this. This is so good, I need more. And then in link nine, grasping, you figure out how you're going to get more. Like you might get up and go ask Patrick for another slice of pie. But if you could just dial it back, you could, in any of those moments, you could dial it back to pleasant. It's just good in this moment and not thinking ahead to, I must have more or I must get away from this. John, I just want to let you know, Mark is doing the recording today, so you guys can figure that out. Unless you want me to also send you record permission at this point. I'm unmuting you. John, did you have anything to say?
I said, if you would, yes, please.
Okay, so you're going to go ahead and start recording it. And Mark has recorded all the stuff that's come before.
Okay.
I will send it to you. All right. So we're at grasping, where we're really in trouble now. We've figured out how we're going to keep this pleasant sensation going in the future. you know, all of subsequent moments, or as long as we possibly can have it, until we get absolutely sick of pecan pie. We're going to keep eating it. And then in 10, we do the deed. And so once you've done the deed, and this was a little confusing last time, how all these things relate to past, present, and future. I think Lama Jinzong can help us with that a little bit, boiling it down. But basically, once we've done the action, we've had the second piece of pie and ice cream, we're going to experience the result of it. We can't get away from the result. We put on the 2 pounds, for those who care about such things. We feel nauseous. We have to go lie down now. We can't do any more work for, like, we lose 2 hours of the day because we feel sick. And like, even worse than that, we have now planted the karmic seed that's going to come back in our next lifetime in Link 2. And we're going to have to go through the same cycle again because we have just reinforced this karmic tendency to crave and grasp and act. So anyway, so then 11 and 12, birth and old age and death, are the results of the action that takes form in links 8, 9, and 10. So is anybody not at least somewhat clear about all of this? I think it's really fairly simple, and it's possible I make it sound complicated. It's a little complicated to work it all out, and we're going to get some help from that. Like, what we're going to be reading today from Trungpa Rinpoche is really about putting it all together, how all of this fits together now that we've been through each of the links in detail. So does anybody have any questions, any comments, any elucidation they would like to add? And Lynn, that could include you too, if you want to bring in any of the Thich Nhat Hanh material. So I'm going to just wait until somebody lets me know that they wish to speak, if they do. Okay, Lynn, I'm going to unmute you.
So I was, after last week, I went and went through a lot of my Dharma books about the 12 links, and I found this Thich Nhat Hanh. Oh, it's backwards, but some of y'all might recognize
it. No, cover. It's not. It looks good.
Oh, it does? Okay.
Yeah, we can see it.
The heart of the Buddhist teachings. And in here, it has this picture. I don't know if that works, but it kind of says the 12 links, and then it calls that inner circle is the 12 links called the deluded mind, and then the outer circle is called the true mind. And so it's kind of the antidotes to each of the links is the way I read that. And then so he talks a little bit about that. So I found that was helpful, especially thinking about chapter 3 in this book that we're reading now. So that's all. Just a reference. Okay. You might like it. But.
Yeah, so that's something, especially if we have that book, we now know that we could look up the 12 links in it.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for more material, there's another one to add to your list.
Right.
So, it's called The Heart of the Buddhist Teachings.
Right.
By Thich Nhat Hanh. Okay, thank you so much, Lynn, for that.
No problem.
Okay, Lama Jinzong, did you want to say anything, or? Okay. Anybody else? Then we will look to Trungpa Rinpoche to carry us further along this path of understanding the 12 links and how they relate to our experience. So where we are still in chapter 2, but after all the links have been explained individually. Again, I don't have the page number, but I'm going to unmute Lama Jinzong for it's the section called The Process of Interdependent Origination.
I have it as page 18.
Okay.
In the thing I downloaded from.
Right, yes. So for anybody using the PDF, here comes Marilyn.
Patrick retrieved the book, page is 21.
Okay, in the book itself, okay. All right, page 21 if you're using the book, page 18 if you're using the PDF. And you know, if it's different, it's somewhere in there. Okay, so process of interdependent origination, we're going to just read this. Through studying the 12 links of interdependent origination, we see that samsara evolves from the root of ignorance and through the process of the 12 stages or links. And so you will have heard a lot of this already. He's sort of summarizing things, and we have done a lot of sort of extracurricular discussion and hit on a lot of these same points. That's great. Hearing it for the 10th time is when you might actually like really internalize it. Yes, Lamaji and Zan.
Yes. Mine is slightly different text, so that's curious. I'm not sure what version
it's
I'm
called
on.
The process of interdependent origination.
I have through the 12 links of interdependent, we saw that the root of ignorance, and through the process of the 12 links, samsara evolves.
Oh, how interesting. So it's been edited.
Okay, so whatever.
It's one of these versions is slightly edited.
Okay.
But it seems like the meaning is the same, but thanks for pointing that out.
Just so I know if my page 18 or whatever may not be what anyone else's is.
Flag it if like it gets completely different. So I'm guessing that somebody tweaked the translation. I don't know between which. I don't know whether you have the latest one or I have the latest one.
Who knows?
All right. Anybody else? Okay. So, I was just digressing a little bit to say it's good. Like, don't feel like it's a waste of time if you feel like I got this. I already got this one. Let's go on to something new. Because easy to feel like that. It's really helpful to have it hammered in. Honestly, I know Marilyn is nodding. She is a teacher. She was the head of a department in a university. And she knows the value of repetition. And also Pema Chodron, when she started, her retreat at Omega this past year, in 2018 on, what was it on? The six realms. The first thing she said was, I've really simplified my teaching style. And now instead of trying to explain a lot of detail, I just go over the main points again and again. And it's really the best way because, you know, if you listen to this, again, and she heartily recommended everybody listen, like everybody who went to the thing got access to the recording for a couple of months. She said, go over it again, you're going to be shocked at how much you did not retain. So she said that her preferred teaching style now, what she finds most effective is just to go over the same things again and again. So the beauty of that is that we come away with something internalized. We actually have an understanding as opposed to having just received a lot of interesting information. So anyway. So again, he has said samsara evolves in whichever version you have. Samsara evolves from the root of ignorance and through the process of the 12 stages or links. Because of ignorance, we make karmic creations. That's the second one, mental formations, we call it. because of that, we have a conditioned stream of consciousness. That's the third link, individual consciousness. Because of that particular conditioning, we are born in a certain way. That's the next few links. Oh, no, well, I guess that's really referring to link four. Once we are born, we have sense faculties to make contact with the world. Consequently, we have feelings, which are just rudimentary reactions to things, although they could be on a gamut from mild to, you know, four chili peppers. consequently, we have feelings. Because we have feelings and the interaction of the skandhas, oops, I just accidentally... Sorry, lost my place here. Very sensitive, the Kindle. We become involved with certain things and so on. Through the 12 links, we see how samsara develops from the first step of ignorance onwards. Each link or step forms the basis for the next. Ignorance not only forms the foundation of the 12 links, but once the cycle begins, it is almost inevitable that the next link will take place, and so on, step by step. Now, I found this wording extremely interesting. Ignorance not only forms the foundation of the 12 links, so that's the first thing. He says, once you have ignorance, it is almost inevitable that the next link will take place. Now, why does he say almost? I don't know, actually. But I thought that was really interesting. Maybe, I don't know, I'm not even going to speculate, but Lama Jinzong is going to help me.
Because it seems that the next paragraph says that it's almost inevitable, but it's not inevitable because there is a chance to reverse.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so on to the next paragraph. We can see that in order to get rid of the 12th link of aging and death and all the problems of life, we need to get rid, in the 11th link, of worldly rebirth. So that's, again, go backwards. And again, Mark sent us the article, which I shared with everybody a while back now, Francesca Fremantle's article from her book, Luminous Emptiness, I think it's called, on the Tibetan Book of the Dead, basically. And she has an explanation, her first chapter is an explanation of the 12 links, and she explains them in reverse order so that we can actually see them from that point of view. So in order to get rid of the 12th link of aging and death and all the problems of life, we need to get rid of the 11th link of worldly rebirth. In order to get rid of rebirth, we need to get rid of the 10th link of becoming, of all the karmic creations that determine rebirth. In order to get rid of becoming, we need to eliminate what they call adopting, what we are calling grasping, and so on. By taking away any former step, the latter step cannot happen. And so we go all the way back to the first step, which is the most important one of all, ignorance. In fact, if one can remove ignorance, then none of the following links can occur. So again, that's what the whole Buddha Dharma is helping us do, is reverse ignorance or remove ignorance. Little by little, our mind clears more and more. And I just want to say that somebody else last week, and I can't remember who it was saying, isn't all we have to do go backwards and reverse them? And what my response was, and that's, Trungpa Rinpoche is confirming that here, but the way that I understand all of this, just to say this for probably the 12th time, that's very nice correspondence with the 12 links, is that I don't think we can intervene in every link. You know, once you have birth, you're going to have aging and death. You know, you can't be in aging and death and say, well, I'm going to not be born. It's like it's unfolding. And same thing for links 3 through 7, where we're just instantaneously taking form from those karmic impulses that we brought with us out of ignorance. But there are places we can intervene. And so by intervening, we unravel the whole step-by-step thing in reverse. So to go back to the text, and so we go all the way back to the first step. Oh, I already read that. Ignorance. In fact, if we can remove ignorance, then nothing happens. There's no links. There's no 12 links if you don't have ignorance. One of the main points to realize is that this body and this life we have now are here because of the things we did in former lives. That is worth thinking about a lot because of what he's going to say next. And that is really useful. You know, that's a really useful way to relate to suffering. And I've known people who were really able to react to suffering immediately by going to, I must have done something in my previous lifetimes that made this, instead of going to blame the situation or blame the person that, you know, maybe is the immediate cause, you go, this is in my karma. That is why it's happening. If it weren't in my karma, it would not be happening. So it's really good to bear that in mind, that everything, like the body and all of our experience, are here because of the things we did in former lives. This life is not something that just happened by itself. It is part of an ongoing process. Our life is established. Our life is established the way it is now because of all the things we did in the past. In the same way, what we are doing now, and this is the important point, because we can't do anything about the past. We can't do anything about that lifetime, you know, 16 generations back where we made that mistake and we're experiencing the fruit in this lifetime. So in the same way, what we are doing now is conditioning and forming the next life. This process is ongoing. So what we need to look at is what we're doing now. That's what we have control over, our actions now. So especially looking at those links 8 through 10, like, let's go back to pleasant, unpleasant. This just feels bad. And maybe I'm just gonna endure this feeling bad and you know, do whatever I need to do that can be done, but I'm not going to allow my emotions to carry me forward to engaging in another action that's gonna reinforce negative karma that I'm then gonna take forward with me into the next lifetime or the next time I encounter this person that I'm having so much trouble with. You know, every time you react to that person, it reinforces the pattern of being sensitive to it and reacting again. And you just did as the almost literal digging yourself deeper and deeper into samsara. And the way to come out is just to go, this person is screaming at me. It is very unpleasant. like on the scale of unpleasant, it's at 16, but I'm just going to stay with this present feeling of unpleasant, and I'm not going to go to where's my blunt instrument to beat this person. Okay, so this is the crux. Like, you could totally highlight this in the same way. What we are doing now is conditioning and forming the next life. Every single thing we do, every single word we say, every single thought we think, like think in terms of engage in, like entertain, like just a thought going through your mind is no problem. And again, that's the present moment. It's when you make the plan or you get involved, it's like becomes a chain of 12 thoughts or whatever. The 12 keeps coming back up. But, you know, every time we do that, we're creating karma. And so we want to make sure the karma we create is like the kind of karma we want, which is good karma, positive karma that will result in happiness, and especially liberation karma, like engage in the activities that will free us from the whole cycle of samsara. And this is the third of the four thoughts, right? Karma. You know, when I die, I will not be free because my previous actions will determine what happens to me, and therefore I must engage only in positive actions. I must not engage in any negative actions, and I need to keep an eye on my stream of being. Like, what's going through my mind right now? Am I at link 7, which is still safe? I got my foot on home base. Or am I like in between, you know, and getting into like an uncontrollable emotional reaction that's going to get me into big trouble? So on to, we'll read a little bit more of Chöngyur Rinpoche, and then I'll see if anybody has anything they'd like to say. So he says, if we look at this in terms of the 12 links, this process that we're now creating our next life, for example, we see that links 3 to 7 are the results of what we do. I think this is either a typo or I just don't get what he's saying here. I find this sentence problematic, but it gets corrected. I mean, I wouldn't blame Chöngyur Rinpoche. It would be a translator thing if it was a problem. It might just be my interpretation, but it gets clarified later in the paragraph. Links 3 through 7 are the results of what we do in this lifetime, and links 1 and 2 belong to the past. I think links 3 through 7 are the result of what comes from the past. So he says that this means that because of ignorance in general and past karma, in this life we have the conditioned consciousness, which leads to the 5 aggregates of perception. These give us the capacity to experience the objective world, link 6, through the perceptual entrances, and to have certain feelings. So that's links 5 through 7. These links, and here he revisits that again and says it in a way that makes sense to me. These links 3 to 7 are the result in this lifetime that is due to a cause we created in the past lifetime. Once we have that particular result, like we're fully formed. You know, what we're sensitive to is fully formed from our previous karma. And so now we're just waiting for somebody to insult us so we can punch them or whatever. I'm using a lot of violent imagery today. I'm going to blame the weather. once we have that particular result, what we do is determined by links 8, 9, and 10. This means that because of the feelings we have about certain things, there is craving, grasping, and becoming. In other words, we become involved with our experience, either wanting more of it or wanting less of it. Then we become even more deeply involved. This is how I'm going to get more of it. This is how I'm going to get rid of it. And eventually, because of our involvement in clinging and rejection, we act. We're so far gone along the path of emotional poison. We're so under the influence of the emotional poison that we lose control. I mean, what does it feel like when you lose your temper? You have no control over that. Once the temper is lost, it is lost. It's like you can't, in the middle of your tantrum, pull back to pleasant, unpleasant. It's going to take a while and you're going to do some damage. So you want to catch it earlier. And that's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying we should be doing that. I'm just saying we should be aspiring to that because that's what's going to solve the thing. Okay, so therefore, I'm going to finish this paragraph and then we'll see if anybody has anything to say. Therefore, links 8, 9, and 10, the troublesome links are related to the present lifetime in terms of what we are doing now and will determine our future life. This future lifetime is then related to links 11 and 12, rebirth and aging, suffering and death. So we did the thing, and now we're born into that karma, that karmic result, and we have the karmic result has to play out. But it's not that grim a picture, and somebody, not me, but again, somebody last week said, but there's things we can do, you know, as 11 and 12 are playing out. Yes, we can do dharma practice to clear up some of that karma. You can purify karma in this lifetime. You can't escape it completely, but you can, you know, unless you become completely awakened in this lifetime, but you can definitely clear away some of it through practice and through controlling your emotional reactions, like pulling yourself back into the present moment again and again and again. It not only keeps you from reinforcing the patterns for the next go round, but it actually mitigates your suffering in this lifetime. If you can stay with pleasant, unpleasant, stay in the present moment, you don't suffer as much, because links 8, 9, and 10 are suffering. Those are suffering. Even if we're getting the pecan pie, you know, and link 10 is we got the pecan pie and we're eating it again and it feels really good right now, that's the suffering of change, because in 5 minutes you're going to realize you just ate the second piece of pecan pie and you're going to have to live that out. So last sentence in this paragraph, in this way we can see the groupings within the 12 links as they relate to the past, present, and future. So does anybody have any questions, any comments, anything to add to this, to Trungpa Rinpoche's lovely explanation? Okay, I see two hands from KDC. All right, you guys duke it out as to who goes first.
So is this seems like the Vajrasattva practice would fit in.
Yes, that would figure in. That would be a big way to help mitigate the effects and avoid taking them forward into the next lifetime. Absolutely.
I was thinking about we know that negative actions include thoughts, mind, negative actions of body, speech, and mind.
Yeah.
How it is possible, I mean, I'm working on the ability of not reacting verbally to something that gets me riled up. The step that's hardest, I mean, and not say anything or not indicate anything negative, but the step that's hardest is the mental part where I'm not having that reaction at all, even mentally, where I don't do anything about it. But that's the step that's really hard for me.
Yeah, well, if you're up to working at that step, you're way ahead. Like, that's really great. You know, most of us are still working on the don't throw the pie in the person's face or whatever it is.
I should say that I'm working on the anger, but I'm still eating ice cream.
So, you're still doing what?
I may be working on the anger, but I'm still eating the ice cream.
Well, yeah, we are. But yeah, you work on the anger at the same time. But I don't know. I don't know that you ever dial it back completely. I mean, certainly we've had enough experience of realized teachers to see that it doesn't manifest in any way. But I don't know what anybody's like. I think pleasant and unpleasant, my own personal theory, which I hope to have a chance to ask somebody about who would know more than me, is pleasant and unpleasant always arise. And so the trick is, like, you might feel that anger, that irritation might come up. But even if it does, then that's when you whack the pig on the snout, right? As we learned in the 37 practices, don't let the pig start eating the flowers, because once the pig gets into your garden and starts, this is from Dingo Chensi Rinpoche, but apparently it's a thing because I've seen it in more than one text now. Once the pig starts eating those flowers in the garden, you're not going to get them out. It's really hard. And no matter how much you whack them on the back, which is what's indicated here, they're still going to stay. But if when they first enter the garden, you whack them on the snout, that's a painful point and they just leave. So yeah, that's what we're working on, is like the irritation starts to arise, just again using anger as like the most obvious example, once it, you recognize it, that's the hardest part, is just recognize I'm starting to lose it now. You know, it's getting beyond unpleasant into like, I can see what's coming is I want to kill this person, or, you know, break this thing or whatever it is, or throw a thing across the room or whatever we do when we get angry. I'm not saying anything about myself here. yes, nipping it in the bud, so to speak. I see John's hand. And did you guys have anything further, Marilyn and Patrick? Thanks. Thank you. Okay, John, I'm unmuting you.
Okay, so I have a question here, and it is, how involved do we have to be with it before it becomes a karmic activity or affects our future or whichever?
Go ahead.
I was just going to read the sentence there.
Sure.
In other words, we become involved with our experience, then we become even more deeply involved, and eventually we act because of the involving in the clinging and rejecting. Therefore, links 8, 9, and 10 are related to the present life term in terms, and it goes on. But yeah. I was just curious about how involved. I mean, is it just the thought? No. Or, I mean, at what point is it causing suffering?
Well, I mean, I think the whole process is suffering, but where it becomes something that's going to cause us future suffering is 10. That is my understanding. It's not that there might not be some karmic effect of the strong emotions of 9 and 8, but it's in 10. My understanding is it's in 10 that we actually, it becomes an action. And I think the reason that we're talking, and I don't know if Trung Rinpoche is saying this or if I'm just saying this speculatively, but it's just easier to intervene before you get to that point of like you're already poised with the blunt instrument. Like it's really hard to pull yourself back. You're already starting to scream at the person. Like that's 10. But if you can catch it in the planning stage, like, oh, I'm about to do something. I'm so close to doing something, but I could not do it. Let me count to 10. Well, you know, let me walk away. It's just easier the earlier in the process that you can intervene, even at pleasant, unpleasant. I mean, that's the place to recognize it if you can. Like, oh, I'm getting that feeling of unpleasantness that I know leads to me losing my temper. So let me just stay in the present moment feeling. And that's that whole method that, like, we know from Pema Chodron, we know from all the teachers, really, but the way Pema Chodron says it is let go of the storyline and rest in the texture of the emotion. Like rest in the texture of pleasant or unpleasant. And it's the storyline that pushes us into the next link and the next link. It's the thought process, I think. Yes, Jinzang, Lama Jinzang.
I think it also became clear for me when I read as you were giving us instructions to go to, you know, continue reading into the relevance of interdependence, that chapter, and then finally into working it into applying it to a single action of killing. And it does seem as if 7, 8, and 9 are sort of a continuous process of, I mean, in the sense that they're sort of one to another, it happens very quickly, and they're sort of grouped a little bit together. So it's like the snowballing effect. You have an experience, and then it's just getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And then once you act from that point forward, it's inevitable that there's going to be a result or a consequence of that action. And again, depending on the strength, I guess the idea is that even if, you know, when it talks about karmic ripening, having certain degrees of results, depending on how you rejoice afterwards, or how, you know, if you're in some way doubtful or uncertain about your activity, but you still sort of do it, that it seems like it's 7 or 8, eight or nine, even if you are having mitigating, you know, but you finally do break through and do whatever you're going to do in 10. Okay, so I said 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah.
But that does somehow affect, like, the result of your action, which takes place in 10, is still going to be mitigated or, you know, change. Whatever the result is affected in that moment by whatever the strength of your commitment to the act is when you finally do. So it does seem as if 8 and 9 is when you're you know, you can affect what type of result is going to happen in the sense of the strength of anger or happiness or whatever. But at 10, when you're actually acting, boom, that's, you can't turn back. That's when karma is going to ripen to whatever strength.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Before I call on Marilyn, yes, thank you very much. Before I call on Marilyn, I just want to respond a little further to John, because I think part of what he might be asking is there are some of the 10 unvirtuous actions are purely mental actions. Covetousness and ill will and wrong view. And I can't really speak to when that becomes like a karmic thing. I think anything like that you want to catch as soon as you can, knowing that if you feel genuine ill will towards somebody, you want them to get hurt. That is a karmic action. But I don't know like how that plays out through 7, 8, 9, and 10. I couldn't pinpoint the moment where it actually becomes karma. That may be clarified a little bit in chapter 5, but I've read through chapter 5 and I'm not sure. And the other thing I wanted to say, which also responds to this and to other things that have been said, is that once we find ourselves in 10, like it's obvious it's a speech or a physical action, we not only have Vajrasattva practice, which you do on your cushion, but we have the four powers. You know, so you could immediately go straight to that, oh my God, I've really screwed up. I did this thing. It hurt somebody, and that's going to hurt my karma. I'm never going to do it again. And then you apply, you think, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, please, you know, help me out here. And do whatever remedy you can, which sometimes you can remedy it by apologizing, like right away, like, oh gosh, I'm sorry, that wren just really lost it right there. And that helps, that mitigates it. It doesn't necessarily completely erase it. Again, I don't know the fine points of it, but that's why we have that process available to us. And the sooner, again, you can catch it and do it, the less harm, I think, has been done and the less karma is going to be invoked. So I'm going to, Marilyn, now we're going to, you're unmuted.
I was only going to mention the four powers. So
great minds think alike. I'm sure we were all thinking about the four powers. Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't call on you immediately. All right. Anybody else?
I have a quick one.
Yes, Mark.
So I'm having a little bit of a, what a cognitive dissonance or something about how in one of the, some of the teachings or aspects is saying it's non-causal.
Yeah.
Right. But then interdependence and like the difference, how to distinguish really clearly between interdependence and causality. Because, because it seems like the way we've been talking about it today is sort of causal really.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think that's the macro way of understanding it. That's the most obvious in your face way to understand it, is that it's cause and effect. And that's not invalid, but there seems to be a subtler level of understanding it where both Kala Rinpoche in Luminous Mind and now Bokhar Rinpoche in the Profound Wisdom of the Heart Sutra have pointed out that the 12 links are always all present at the same time. Like the cycle only takes place if they're all present. I think it speaks a little bit to the instantaneous nature of it in terms of moment-to-moment existence. But I'm not sure I can solve that cognitive dissonance. I think I have some of it too. And we just, that's one of the times we just have to just wait and see what comes next.
Sure.
Yeah. I think we will understand it better. But thank you for bringing that in, because I think we all, that's something hard to understand. Yes, Loma Jinzang.
I hate to bring this up if you're going to be going through.
Please.
Because what he just said was, is there's a, talk about dissonance, because when it goes on to later on page, I have 23, somehow in chapter 3 after the little thing on the view when it talks about the five aspects of causality,
right?
You know, and it says the reasons that they can all be existent at the same time, because in accord with that, it's saying that when you have the cause and it becomes the result, they can never be existing at the same time. Yeah. So it's like, you know, if you're saying the links are cause and effect, then it's always talking about one thing becomes the next, and you're never, there's not transference, and the cause is never found actually, like the seed can't be found in the shoot, et cetera. So just saying out loud that when we say all things continuous, that you have to be together at the same time, I don't know how to work with that. either.
Yes. Well, guess what? We're not going to read that part. And the reason is because I don't, it's new to me. Like, that kind of reasoning is not my forte, and I haven't engaged in it enough, and I don't follow it very well. I think we could all read that chapter, and you're welcome to bring comments and questions, but we're not going to read through that. We're only going to read through that little section, the view, because I don't want to get too deep into Buddhist logic, because we could be here for a year studying the 12 links, and because I just don't understand it well. And if anybody feels we should go through that chapter, please feel free to speak up or let me know. And we can slog through it. But I don't know how much light it's going to shed, at least from my presenting it. Anybody else? Anything further, Lama Jinzong?
Just that I feel that when we get to, I think I'm going to wait on anything else about something happening simultaneously until we get to the thing on killing, because I think then we'll have a better sense of, because I'm beginning to feel that somehow that single comment in that Kalu Rinpoche book might, you know, I'm not sure if that's a full representation of what he said or not. I don't know, but I would rather wait until we get to analyzing it in that instant before we get any further into it.
Yeah. And again, I'm not sure we're going to solve it, but I think the more you go over it and the more you wrestle with it in your mind and the more input that you get from teachers who understand this, the clearer it will eventually become. So yes, Dave, I'm going to unmute you.
I was just going to ask if you're familiar at all with this. As my understanding is that the 12 links can also be part of an actual different type of causality than just Newtonian causality. It's like this specific thing where you're talking about causes and conditions being, you know, like compounded stuff. So this is actually like its own type of causality, and that's what Kalu Rinpoche was hinting at. That was my understanding anyway.
I think you might be onto something. Not that I can, you know, I mean, I can't take it in immediately, but yeah, I think so. I think there's more than one thing going on here, more than one level of, like, Lama Dini Rinpoche, I got to talk to him a little bit about translation a few years ago when he was teaching at KTC, and he said that one of the problems with translation into another language of the Dharma is that there are seven levels of meaning to everything in the Dharma. And so your translation has to reflect that. It has to somehow, you know, speak to that so that people could read it on these different seven different levels.
Right.
I think you're on to something here, and there's something else going on. So we can all contemplate that over the coming, we're going to see each other again at the end of February, the last 2 weeks of February. So we've got like a few weeks to contemplate this actively and in the back of our mind. Yes, Lama Jinzong.
Since you just mentioned it, at your convenience, can you give us, just so we can talk about the dates, would that be February 17th and 24th?
That sounds right. Do you remember, Marilyn? Yes, you're unmuted now. You weren't before.
17th and 24th, if those are Sundays, that's right.
Yeah, okay. If those are Sundays, that
are. They are. Okay, perfect.
Okay, 17th and 24th.
It doesn't conflict with the two first Sundays, which we have a lot going on at KTC. So for a selfish reason, that's really good.
Yes, it's after Losar, for example, and after Lama Norla Rinpoche's year, his first anniversary of his passing. Okay, anybody else? We're now at 12:56, so I don't think we'll go further with the text now. Right, we are on, what page are we on? Anybody who has pages? We're going to pick up next time with the process of dependent origination is going on all the time. It's a very lovely paragraph. Feel free to read ahead and read it again and again. Absolutely. I'm going to just make a mark here. Patrick, you had something?
Yeah, I've got kind of a personal emergency happening, and I need to talk to you after this is over. It's
dark. Okay.
But...
Okay, yeah, sure.
Okay,
sure. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else got anything? Okay. Well, I think once we do our prayers, we might end exactly on time today, which is, I'm not sure that's ever happened before. So we should mark that as a joyous occasion. Okay, so I've got my prayers out. And I think we have like, oh, somebody's got a, okay, John says that the view is on page 24 of the PDF. Okay, that's in chapter 3. We're not quite up to that yet. We still have a few paragraphs, I think, of chapter 2 to go. But that's the next place we'll go. Thank you, John. Is the section in chapter 3 called The View. And that's the only section of chapter 3 that I have planned to read. And then we will be on to chapter 4, which is further explanations of the interconnectivity of it all. And then in chapter 5, which is very short, he goes through all the steps with regard to the act of killing, which supposedly we can also apply to ice cream. Okay. Anybody else? Thank you, John. All right. Is everybody muted? Yes. Okay. So we'll do our prayers then. But before we even dedicate, let's just take a moment again to settle our minds, straighten our posture, become completely receptive, all our senses open. Complete open awareness, all senses means visual, auditory, if we smell anything, any tactile sensations, if we taste anything, and also any thoughts going through our mind, any thoughts or emotions. If you're feeling that slight bit of irritation or desire, right now lunch is right ahead of us. You could leave it at pleasant, unpleasant. Just completely bringing the mind to rest in our body, in this present moment of experience. And whatever pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral we might be feeling right now. And now we'll do our dedication. This merit, may it win omniscience. Defeat my faults, the enemy. Then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddha Kayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. Okay, I'm going to unmute everybody now. So thank you for being with us, Lama Jinzang.
Lama Jinzang, I would just like to say to Lama Chidrin, am I unmuted? He yes. Just has such a great sense of humor. I really got a good guffaw. Yeah, several guffaws. Thank you.
Thank God I have expunged all sarcasm from my repertoire.
This is why we get along so well. I also come up with really, questionable. The thing about pulling out the bludgeon, that was my favorite.
Well, that's why I can't help it. I used to say letting the air out of somebody's tires, but then Andy called me on that and said, he said, how many people's tires have you let? And,
anyway, thank you.
It's the pie. Let's just go with the pie. Okay, well, bye, everybody. I'm going to stay on with Patrick. So I'm going to let everybody exit on their own.
Anybody else can stay, too. But
thank you.
Oh, anybody else can stay. Okay, so if anybody else has any further discussions.
Well, don't we have, Patrick, you said you had something private, personal to talk about.
No, it's personal. It's not private. It's about a friend of mine has a crisis.